Welcome everyone to the Racing Home Podcast. Got myself, Nick Agutter. Fez is MIA, missing in action. He's not here today, but we got Richard King again. And we got a new guest, Andy. Go ahead and say something about yourself, Andy. We've never had you on here before. You go and compete in what? Street Mod previously, but you're doing Track Mod now?
Yes, Street Mod for the past 2 years. Yeah, Track Mod this year, because I realized that Street Mod is dumb for me.
And what car do you use to compete in?
C5 Z06.
Very nice. How long have you had it for?
4 years. Bought it 12/31/20. I guess 3 years? I can't do math. 3 years, I think?
Roughly, around that time. Like
that. Yeah.
Very nice. But yeah, what's actually pretty cool about having the two of you on this episode is the fact that you both have C5s. Wait, Richard, is yours a Z06?
No, I have...
No, so yours is a poor model version.
I have the Walmart C5.
Except, that's right.
All right, so Andy has the Target C5. Richard has the Walmart C5. Actually, your C5, Richard, is color blue, so it actually matches up with Walmart colors.
Walmart.
Well, technically, green, it has some red now, so it's like...
Oh, it does. It does have a little bit of red.
We're going up market. We're going up market, which is kind of the whole point of this podcast, isn't it?
It's slowly merging into a Target realm, starting to get a little bougie. So I want to start off with Andy, and I want to hear, why did you go from Street Mod to now Track Mod? Why did you go up market, upscale?
So I'm going to try and say this as elegantly as I can, but I have a really, I don't really know how to articulate this very well.
Oh, you're fine. We don't articulate anything on this podcast.
Okay. So here's the thing. So I run Street Mod. I ran my first full season last year. And before that I tried to run a season and my trans blew up, at NCM. I think that was like the first time that we met. In person.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Andy and I, first time we ever met each other was at NCM.
Yeah,
I forgot your transmission blew up, and that was actually the first time I had like a part failure to the point where like shit, if I don't
track. Yeah, because we were using the die grinder to like get your wheel stud out, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Wheel stud broke, so it's like shit, I need to take this out, and the focus the hub blocks the wheel stud from popping straight out, so we just grinded down the hub. Shoved it out and then put a new one in there, and I did the other side when I got back home.
Yeah, maybe I'm just bad juju, because the first time I met Fez, he slammed his car into a wall. So it's like
fuck.
First time I meet everyone.
I'm going to sage my car the moment I meet you, Andy.
Maybe we should end the podcast right here. I don't want any listeners crashing while driving.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, you can cut that out. So back to the question.
Yeah.
So the thing I realized after running a year of Street Mod is that I think the chassis setups are more or less about the same. Like, your mid-corner speeds, like, your min speeds are all the same. Like, there's pretty much, I think there's, like, three major factors when I look at this to figure out how competitive I can make my car and maybe, like, ways that I can get an edge over my competitors. And I think for Street Mod, the rules are like, you're restricted in terms of traction, like by tire size, right? So like you're limited to 285 or smaller for rear wheel drive or front wheel drive, and 255 or smaller for all wheel drive. I don't really care about that.
Hey, no.
But you're running like a 270, but everyone's running essentially a 275. Just because it's the aspect ratio that you need. That's what Jackie runs. That's what I ran. That's what pretty much everyone else in the top five with rear-wheel drive is running. But I think, like, and then the aero is, like, kind of open, you know, like five inch splitter extension. You can have canards. Yep. You can have a decent-sized wing that sits, like, you know, approximately 5 inches from the bumper, which isn't really much of a limitation. But really, like, I think, the thing that really changes how I saw Street Mod was the engine restrictions, because the power levels are, it's not power capped. It's just, and when you really look at the rule book, it's open to do just about anything. Like a stroker, like a 408 stroker LS2 with the twin turbo kit is legal in Street Mod.
In track. Oh, in Street Mod.
Like in Street Mod. And so like,
no, I was just looking at, so you're looking at, right.
So you're looking at a class that would allow north of 1,000 wheel, but you're traction limited to 275 mid corner.
Wait, hold on. I'm reading the street mod rules right now. It actually does have a bullet point where it said naturally aspirated V8 engine swap in combination with aftermarket forced induction is not permitted.
Yeah, it's not an engine swap though. It's, I mean, like you could, so I could just, stroke.
Oh, you could still an LS. Okay,
you can stroke.
You're already running that motor.
Like an LS1 stroke. I think you can get them down to, you can get them up to like a 383, which is over 6 liter. That doesn't really matter. Like effectively, it doesn't matter what motor you're gonna put in it. Like,
and a stroker motor is gonna make so much power everywhere.
In LS it will, form. And so, and I think what I realized was like this last year, I focused on maximizing grip because I didn't want to have engine issues. I just wanted a reliable drivetrain to make it through the season.
Yeah, and which you did,
and I did, and I did pretty well. Like I placed sixth overall, but I think, the thing I realized is that there's just like such a power, like there's so much of a power difference between people who are like really committed to street mod and like people like me that don't want to push like crazy power. Cause I think you really do like I realized this last year that I draw the line at like replacing a rotating assembly because the moment your motor comes out and you have to do motor work, your costs go up like an insane amount. Like yeah, it's really easy to go over 10 grand.
There's like that like 550, 600 wheel threshold, at least for LS land. And once you get above that mark, the cost.
Oh, even 550 though. Cause like, I mean, you're looking, cause I did an assessment. I have like spreadsheets on spreadsheets of all these builds. And I like, and I, you know, I like looked, I combed the internet to figure out the probability of making this kind of power on an LS3, on an LS2, on an LS7, on my LS6, LS1. And like, LS6, LS1, you're like 6K into 480 wheel with like really good heads, good cam profile, like good intake manifold, like LS2 throttle body, you know, like an LS3, you're looking at like 490, 480 wheel with a hot cam intake, an intake with a stroker LS3, you're looking at like 550, 560, maybe like if you spent a lot of money. But at that point, you're almost spending as much money as like buying an LS7, and an LS7 with a cam will make about 600. If you do NA stuff, which is going to cost you like over 20, you can get to like 7 to 8.
Mm-hmm.
But it's 20 grand. I mean, you could also like buy an I could buy a GRD6 almost, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I could also just go to Club PR and save my money in the long term. Anyway, so here's the thing. Like, so pretty much when I look at the rule book for Street Mod, it ends up becoming a drag race because everyone's traction limited, and so you're not going to find time on people mid corner, and the aero allows you to do some external aero but doesn't allow you to do like under body work, so you can't flat bottom the car, and so you're not finding additional time there, and so you're going to find it only in the straightaway. And it was really nice for me to compare it to a driver like Ryan Matthews, who's a seasoned driver with a 447 LS7 and a C5 Z06 on AO52 275.
You know, I met him this week at Super Live Battle.
Yeah, he's a super nice guy. Yeah,
super nice guy. And that car, like, coming from that land of, like, autocross, Optima stuff, he's a great benchmark. He is an incredible driving talent. And, like, that car is very well sorted.
Yep, and it's hard to find cars like that because when I was, you know, like, if you go to an HPDE, there's a bunch of, like, shitty Corvette drivers that you can't compare to. And so it's nice to see like a driver who
cars
knows
and
what
coffee
he's doing.
Folks with just a little more money, adrenaline aspirations.
Yeah, it's nice to see, it's nice to be able to compare like someone who has the same chassis who's already done like what I was thinking of doing because I wanted to do an LS7 variant, like big NA build. And and when I compared like last year I ran an LS6 with a stock cam, just an exhaust manifold, intake manifold, or actually stock intake manifold, just an intake and a tune. So I was maybe like, I don't know, 360 to 380 wheel. I think Ryan Matthews makes around 670 on VP race gas. And at least like 650 to 670. So we're talking like a 300 wheel disparity. It amounted to 4 seconds at CMP. Like I have a side-by-side video that I just like, I grabbed his lap, his fastest lap off of YouTube, and I put it side by side to see where I'm losing time. And it is entirely from straightaways. Like no amount of, like we had like very similar mid corner speeds. Even if I'm like a couple mile an hour faster mid corner min speeds, it doesn't matter. Like the car was so fast in a straightaway, it actually I get dusted. And I see the same thing when I look at the CMP or when I look at the NCM lap from like 2 years ago against Nick Kors in a HN Civic Turbo. Like, he beat me by a second. We were actually neck and neck up until the last corner at NCM. Granted, I'm pretty good at the first half of NCM, and I'm like absolute dog shit at the second half of NCM. But we were like rounding the last corner at the same time, and then he pulled a second on me on the straightaway. Holy shit. A drag race. That car looks absolutely nuts. Like, it looks like a rocket ship. Like, it feels like a rocket ship watching a YouTube video. I can't imagine what it actually feels like in person.
But yeah, I can imagine.
When I looked at this, I look at my C5. I think, like, the way that I assess this is, well, one of the biggest advantages of a Corvette is the fact that we can fit huge tire without having to really do much work at all, right? Like, we're not having to cut and rebox rear quarters to do wide body stuff. You don't even really need to do a wide body to go over to a 305, 315. And like,
I've ran 335 on a stock body. You just have to have the right wheel offset.
Yeah. Like, so like our advantage is that we can run massive tire without having to do a bunch of work. Like, I talked to like Jamie Santos about his car and was on his like 1M replica. And he's like, you know, he thinks he's like tough shit running 18x10.5s. In the front. I'm like, oh, that's cute. Like, so that's like, that was like my rain set
last
year.
That's child's play, man, in C5 world.
Yeah, but like for everyone else, it's like you get to double digit widths in the front, dude, like crazy. For us, it's like, dude, I mean, like, I'm running an 18 or 19 by 12 and a half all around this year on stock fenders still. Like,
it's good. That's good.
It's crazy, but like,
yeah.
Going to Street Mod, that's
what wheels are you running, Andy?
Apex SM10s. They like don't really fit. I actually just designed a flare to like a little fender spec.
I've seen those wheels before on C5s. They poke a little bit.
They poke a little. I kind of wish the offs were a little higher.
Did you get the C7 style little lip flare things? Because you can buy them. Yeah, that's and actually, if you heat them up a little bit, they'll fit perfectly around our front fenders. I'm gonna do that to my car.
I tried to find them. I have a want to buy out on a couple pages right now, but I can't.
No one's hitting you
like,
up.
I don't want to spend real money on these. Like, that's the problem, right? So like, I just stand.
I'll ask my buddy. He bought an eBay knockoff set for his base C7. I'll hit him up and I'll get back to you.
Okay, let me know. Otherwise, I 3D scanned the front end of the car at some point, and I was just gonna, and I designed a flare last night that I was gonna print today and just see if it would fit, and then just build the tabs on the back side and then just bolt the thing on. I just need to cover the top of the tire, like, just to get through this year, because I don't have any money to wide body this car after spending all the money doing everything else.
Yeah, the 3D print will be good if you just print it in the right direction.
Or actually, I also found that. So I was like trying to measure things out with a metal ruler, and then I realized that I could also just bend the metal ruler to fit, and it looked pretty good.
Literally, just Home Depot tab the fucking metal ruler. It's like fucking street sign that shit.
Like, yeah, I was like, I looked at it, I was like, holy shit, this is not offensive.
Okay. So anyway,
the other thing you can do is like, I don't know how wide your splitter is. But if you kind of want to segue that into making like a front air dam in the front,
to make a full spat,
have some wheel spat to it, help get that splitter to work a little better.
Yep. The whole point of the C5 though is that like you can fit big tires, so Street Mod's just the wrong place for it. And when you look at op costs, because I know Richard, you mentioned something about operation costs, right? And you're like, well, it's cheaper to run in Street Mod. And for the longest time, I also said I never wanted to be in a class higher than Street Mod because I had my LS240. The thing was a track mod car through and through. It was crazy expensive, right? Mm-hmm. But when you get into like serious Street Mod stuff, like when you're trying to place top five consistently, you're going to spend pretty much track mod money. And Street Mod is getting so competitive right now that you can really like when I look at Grid Life's, you'll have like your top pack. I think it's anywhere that you have competition. You have like you mm-hmm. usually have at least like a top pack of drivers, and then there's maybe a gap, and then you have that second pack of drivers. And if it's like a big enough class, then you have like a third pack, right? But that was kind of clustered. Your times kind of cluster together.
But Formula One, baby.
Like, yeah, but when you look at like your probability of doing well, like for me, I was like at the bottom of the top pack last year. Mm. I'd like to say for power reasons, but I don't know. That may be conceded. didn't make enough
is
power.
Is there realistically, like looking back at it, is there anything else you feel like you could have done with setup?
No.
Do you increase cornering speeds? Like, because Ryan Matthews, for example, is on drop spindles. And those do a lot.
I asked him about those. I asked him about
if it made they're like the OG LG ones, but it's like
he said it did not. He said he couldn't feel much of a difference at all. Here's the thing though, right? You need to like go back and do the math if you really want to understand this. If like the way I think I would do the study is I would figure out what the min speed would be to cover 4 second delta at CMP. Like what I would have to average, how much faster I'd have to drive, and how much higher is the average speed for me to make up that power difference? And it's just not there. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think the robot will
that
allow
tire
you to
size.
Do that
no,
much.
That's too much of a gap.
On that tire size, you won't. And yeah, it's the chassis setup is too restrictive.
No, it makes sense. You're limited on downforce. Rewards, you're limited on tire size.
Yeah, and you look at and like to be fair, like Dewey's car is like proof of that, right? Like the thing is unbelievably fast. Like it's all powered.
It freight trains. It freight
it's
trains
a good,
down
I mean,
front straights.
I think the gear. I think the gearing is set right on that car. Like they did a lot of work on gearing and drivetrain, and they nailed it. Like I can like for sure that thing does not make more downforce than any C5 with the decent aero setup. Like the thing has like crazy high frontal area relative to like a C5. Like so, it's got way more drag than we do. Like it's just not shaped right. Right. Like the thing is not designed for this stuff. But the fact that he literally beat the fuck out of all of us by not just like a little, by a lot, like even Ryan Matthews, right? Like I talked to Matthews at Mid-Ohio and he was like, he said like coming out of Keyhole, he got like, he just got like dusted in a straight line by him. Like that's over 600 wheel LS, like built LS7 on race gas, getting wrecked by
a Subaru,
like, a 5RS. Like, I don't know, man, you know, like, and like for sure, like that straightaway is long enough where if he's, I mean, like it sounds like he was fast enough to make up like over a second on him just driving in a straight line. Like
that's insane because Ryan's car is also like 3,000.
Ryan's car is dummy fast. Like it's
dummy
crazy.
Fast, yeah. Man. Like,
yeah. And to get wrecked like that and to be consistent, like, and it's not like it wasn't just like I know, like you know, I talked to like Ito Waxman about Mid-Ohio, and he tells me, you know, from his Pratt and Miller experience that Mid-Ohio is a power course. And so like, yeah, that part makes sense. But when you look at how consistent Dewey has been everywhere being faster than Ryan, I think that's the proof for me that like it is ultimately a power thing. That wasn't like for Ryan Matthews, he has enough driver experience that it's not driver. Like he may have bad days, but his bad days are definitely still not that bad. And like, yeah, like I think the yeah, I just when I look at this whole
sense.
Thing like and when I look at this so, like
all yeah, the other variables that make a fast car, like I looked at like Nick is like, do your homework, read the rules before this podcast. And I'm like, well, okay, based on the interior rules and all the other chassis rules, you're really kind of limited on weight too, right? It's not like you can just build a really light car, and it's not even like you can really bend your way into enough weight that it's going to make the difference anyway, you know. So it's like you got to have all your climate systems, you can only change material on so many things, you know. You're really not able to make up that gap in other ways either, right? You're not able to make the downforce, you don't have the tire. It's not like there's a cheater tire out there. Everyone sort of runs the same thing on roughly the same size wheels. You know, it's not like there's something that no one's exploiting.
Yep.
You sound like what you're saying. Yeah.
And I think the other part too is like you can try pulling more weight out of your car. You can try pushing the limit of the rule books. But if you want to guarantee that you'll do well in Street Mod, just make more power. Like, I realized that part too. Like, for a second I was like, okay, but what if I like game the rule book and I just pull a bunch of crap out of the car, so I just have like HVAC with like, you know, just whatever, like pretty much like paper, like, you know, just like balsa wood for the air box, you know, so like when I turn it on, it just blows air and it goes the right places, but then there's like nothing underneath there. But it doesn't, like, it's still not a guarantee I'd even be like, you know, higher than like top four. But for sure, like, if you just made power, that alone would be enough. Like,
that's kind of the thing I was learning at Superlap Battle, and I went and I was just like, none of these cars look like they particularly were like shooting for the maximum of the rules. I felt like all of the money spent on like a lot of these street class cars, because street class was kind of like the class I had my eye on, which Ryan Matthews was in.
Yep. It
was just like power. Like, you have all these Supras that really just, they looked like freaking stock Supras with aero on them and a little bit of, you know, like some diffusers or like some carbon fiber hood,
like
whatever.
Pretty basic, like pretty run-of-the-mill.
It's just
aero.
Like, you hear they're like, yeah, we built the motor, the B58 makes 600 wheel horsepower. It's just some crazy number, right? Like, everyone was a little different.
This car is making, well, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and
more
that's
than
what
that.
I was explained too, is like, even in street class in Global Time Attack, you have cars making 1,000 wheel, just like you're talking about in Street Mod. So I feel like it's a buyer's game on who can just put together the best fucking drive.
Okay, but economy. To be fair, okay, I think we should maybe move away from that though, because all of racing is a buyer's game. Like, you can
at
buy
the end
your
of the day,
yes. You can like buy a complex.
I don't know, man. I have like 20k in mods in this C5 and in autocross. It's done pretty fucking well. So if you're cheap enough.
So here's the thing. Like, I think Corvette definitely like much better value. I mean, unfortunately, you have to like sit inside of it though. So, like, you know, there's costs associated with that. It's not all great.
Part of me really wants to flock my interior just to sort of band-aid the wound that is the dash of that car.
Yeah.
Well, what's so cool is when I bought that car, it was like all stock, right? I started from the boomer ground bottom of C5 land. It had this like dash cover, but he had like the previous owner had Velcroed it like in really good areas and done a really good job of having like the Velcro put on the dash cover and on the dash. And it's like, I've gone 140 on the back stretch of Harris Hill and it hasn't like, it doesn't do anything. It just chills and there's no glare and I kind of love it.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. I don't know what brand of dash cover it is, but I was like, oh shit, this is actually kind of cool.
It's probably like eBay or something.
I mean, seriously, like the freaking, the red on the Corvette logo in the middle is all faded. Like,
yeah.
Oh, it's,
but yeah, so the other part, I think, I guess maybe complete the thought, like, so Track Mod allows you to do quite a bit more, right? And especially, like, I know you're making, like, canards and some other bits of aero. I think it just makes it more interesting for all of us to play with more variables other than power. Like, I think we should be able to podium without making over 500 wheel. Because you look at, let's, C5R, right? C5R is able to put down, like, the same lap time as Ferris at Road Atlanta. Like, I watched a video of a C5R.
On tires from 2004.
Yeah, I mean, like, we're talking about like tires that should perform like AO52s, you know, like just not in, maybe not in long, maybe not in like in longitudinal grip, but definitely in lat grip. And I mean, like, the video I found of one of these C5Rs at Road Atlanta, it ran like a 128 in the rain, like in the rain, enough rain that the wipers were on, you know, like, dude, okay, like that's just ridiculous, right?
Oh, it's
but
insane.
It can do it, like. That's a restricted sub 600 horse car. Like, you do not need to make, like, Ferris makes with almost 2,000 horse. Like, I think what last year he ran right around like 1,200 wheel
Ferris
or something.
Makes
like
that much power. I thought he was doing like 1,100 wheel.
I think that's what he's operating at, but I know this variant this year is more, like, it can do a lot more. I think I'm guessing he's probably still sorting the car out, so there's no reason to risk it all.
He didn't even. I met him for the first time at COTA at Superlap. He's like, dude, the fact you're talking to me right now is the reason I'm still awake. Because he was telling me that he was on like a 40 something hour stretch of no sleep, but he still like had his car out talking to people.
He's,
I thought it was really cool.
He's sharp. Like, I like that he knows.
He is a very sharp man.
He's not one of those guys where you're like, oh, clearly you did not build this. Like, he definitely did a lot of that, or at least
I picked his brain on quite a few things, and yeah. I got that same impression. Like,
yeah, you get the vibe. You just get the yeah. the thing.
It is a vibe. Like, honestly, D-Aura. It's like
yeah, the initial D-Aura thing is definitely real.
he didn't have a YouTube mechanic behind the camera, you know, sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. So, but anyway, yeah. So track mod. 100 treadwear tires also better because they last longer. I found that SC3Rs are from me talking to my friends that have run SC3Rs and AO52s back to back. They say that SC3Rs are up to a second faster, depending on tarmac condition, of course, and temperature. But you get more consistent laps. Lifetime is probably about the same. But the prices are actually about the same. Like when I priced out RE275 RE71s and 305-19 SC3Rs, the prices were like pretty much the same and cheaper.
The AO52s are more expensive than A7s.
Yeah, no, the thing is,
literally it's more expensive than A7s. Yeah,
it's dumb. So that drove me to do this. Like I can.
So whatever, what are you gonna do?
So what? What else are you
going to ask?
Oh, I think you're asking the same question, Nick.
Well, let's see. I'll ask my question, and you tell me if it's the same one. Andy, so what have you done to your car to at least be more competitive in track mod? Because
nothing,
if you...
nothing that would make me any less competitive in, or any more competitive in street mod. I made that decision like 2 or 3 months ago, and my car has been down since August. So... like okay. I did not plan on doing track mod things, but it's very clear to me that, you know, like I spent all of last year just optimizing chassis and just making sure that it gave me the tools as a driver to put down the times I need to put down. And I was able to do that. Like I definitely feel like I gave Kyle McHugh a run for his money. And considering that car is making 550 wheel and I'm on a stock cam LS6, like I think it did pretty damn good. And the chassis is pretty well set up. Like, even at Mid-Ohio, I think we were within a second of each other, which is pretty wild considering the power difference.
Yeah, I was actually looking at Mid-Ohio right now at the lap times. And I think you ran, what, a 132.646? And in track mod, that would have placed you into a fifth place. Yeah, so you would have positioned one spot higher in track mod.
When I also look at where I place the same or better, but it's because it's less competitive.
Yeah.
And I think next year we'll only get more competitive in street mod because now you have Jonathan Wheeler, who I'm going to be honest. Like I talk a lot of shit about Z's, like Nissan Z's. I, you know, like come from Nissan. Like I get it. I have not seen a single 350Z aside from like the special ones, like Sasha Annis's car and stuff. Like I have not seen Z's where I'm like, whoa, like, dude, this thing is crazy. It's like usually I'm like, how the fuck is this thing slower than an S2000 with like a bolt-ons at the track? But Jonathan Wheeler's car, I mean, that twin turbo 370Z is fast. Like he should have beat me at CMP last year on GTA enthusiast spec.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Like he wasn't even on 200 treadwears and he pretty much matched my lap time at CMP. Like that shit was nuts. I can't lose to a Z with all the shit I talk about him. Like, it's crazy.
You got to defend yourself.
Yeah, exactly. I got to, yeah.
The Corvette peeps are relying on you, Andy. You better deliver.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, so Richard, so now I'm curious about your car. So like, right now as a sit, it would class into track mod.
Absolutely. 100%. 100% track mod.
Okay.
It's 2,875-ish pounds.
Yeah, that's definitely a lot of interior.
It's on 18x12, 18x13-inch wheels. The aero, definitely. Like, I have dual element wing. I got to put way more of the interior back in. I think that's kind of the biggest thing. And so, like, for y'all who are way more familiar with the grid life rules than me, is in track or in street mod rules for interior, I have it pulled up. It says, and I quote, cars must remain full dash. Climate systems and controls. Does that mean I have to have AC in the car?
For track mod?
No.
For street mod.
Street mod.
You actually don't even need your heater core. You can get rid of your heater core as long as you have a blower motor and your controller works.
Okay, that's really nice. Because pulling I had to lift the passenger side of my motor through the motor mount to get that AC compressor out. That was such a pain in the ass. So I don't want to put my AC back in to run Street Mod.
Yeah, no, you don't need to. Though I would, okay, I'm cool. Super jealous that you have AC because I would absolutely keep.
No. I pulled my AC. I pulled my AC last year.
I pulled mine and put it right back in.
No, dude, I drove my car. Other than to SCCA Nationals, I drove it to every event. So I drove it to Houston. I drove it to Dallas in the summer with no air conditioning.
Yeah,
it's 105 degrees, dude.
I'm not
cooking
state.
At it like.
Yeah.
I'm not like that. That is. Yeah. But my girlfriend bought me a 3-liter Camelback bladder, which is kind of a fucking lifesaver. You just hang the Camelback over your tablet mount, and I just was drinking water and staying hydrated. And I'm thinking about buying a cool suit. Because honestly, it was
like a hamster.
I deleted my AC at the beginning of 2023, and I won LS Fest Texas against the Summit Autocross team, against Robbie Unser, and like a lot of really big names in racing. Yeah. By 0.018 seconds. And I was like, God damn it, it's the fucking air conditioning being out of the car that got me that time. Because that was an aggregate over three different events, Autocross Day 1, Autocross Day 2, and the track sprint. So those times combined, I was still 0.018 of a second. And I was like, okay, I'm pretty committed to not having AC in this car now. And
that could also, I think you should keep in mind though that can also, I mean, that's also well within the window of just driver to driver variation, right? Like,
driver comfort is real, which is why I've also invested a ton into ergo. So like, I have like to essentially like the 10th of an inch have like my wheel spaced how I want it. Mm-hmm. I have an AMT motor. I have an AMT seat mount, which Andy, you probably
best
know about.
Best seat mount.
Period. Like Mark did such a great job with that. You have it like an infinite level of adjustment, essentially.
Yep.
I have a Sparco Sprint, which is very much an entry level seat, but honestly, like I've street driven it to Houston and Dallas and beyond.
As long as you fit, it doesn't matter what it costs.
Well, cost, and it's like people are like, "Oh, my back hurts so much," but I'm like, it's really for that seat for me. It just fits me well. Right. Mm-hmm. So ergo is a big thing. And I agree, driver comfort's big, but I don't.
Yeah.
If I were to do AC again, I'd do like an electric AC in the dash sort of thing. But
just I actually bought all the AC components. So my C5 was like, dude, the thing is, when I bought it, it was like 130,000 miles on it. I'm like the 11th owner. It's like,
fuck.
It's been beat.
We have like opposite stories on our cars.
Yeah, I mean, so like my buddy that, you know, the buddy I bought it from, like he like put a new clutch in it at one point and he was doing like drag racing stuff. And he was like, yeah, you know, he's like, yeah, stock LS7 clutch is good for about 80 pulls. I was like, what?
He doesn't know, but he doesn't go by like,
he doesn't go by line. It's like not by mileage. It's just by number of drag pulls.
Okay. So this is a hot take, but I think the LS7 clutch is thoroughly overrated.
Oh, it's a piece of crap.
Like, it's a piece of crap. The bite point is in the stratosphere. Like it really can't hold up to modern power. Like, okay. 10 years ago, it was a great clutch. 10 years ago for, you know, LS3s and LS7s at the time was great, but really you need to go aftermarket now if you want something either for big power or
to be fair,
the abuse of track use.
It's affordable. Like you can't argue it's like a
it is, but
clutch.
Neither is the labor of replacing it, right? Like unless you're doing it yourself, like just buy once, cry once. Get like a Texas drivetrain diamond or like a monster clutch or something like that. Something good for the big numbers and something that's honestly going to be way lighter and get you to be faster.
Yep.
So yep. And that's me finally replacing my clutch. Oh yeah. The first time my clutch started to slip was at
24 hours from now, Nick, we're gonna be doing your clutch.
Yeah, 24 hours. Car's back up in the air. It's ready to go.
Yeah, actually to be fair though, like when I look at the only thing I'll give it is the LS7 clutch is like $500. And when I looked at like when I look at clutches for like anything else, like like my buddy's like old Mark 7 GTI, Nick Carl's GTI. Dude, I also get clutch kits with him. I still remember this because it was so ridiculous. Like I will never forget it. He was showing me these clutch kits, and he's like, yeah, you know, this clutch kit only holds like 400 foot pounds of torque, and it was like a $900 clutch kit. And I was like, what?
How?
What? Yeah, like a stock, you know, like GM can sell like a stock clutch that can handle more power, right? Like that's for like half the price.
Talking to like to those type of people, like having own LSs, it's just like such a like the scale is so different on things. So I run a Texas drivetrain stage 3 diamond. So it's a single disc 6 puck, but it has they have a 15 pound billet flywheel option. I feel like that's like the perfect.
What's the diameter of that? Is that that's not low MOI, right?
It's a stock diameter.
Okay.
It's a stock diameter.
I would highly recommend doing. I put a 7.25 quartermaster clutch in, and it is day and night difference. Like 20, I think it's. I measured it out at. I think it was like 22 or 23 pounds total assembly with the flex plate.
Mm-hmm. The other thing I think about too is with the autocross stuff, we have like Pro Solo, which with Pro Solo, it's like essentially there's two autocross lanes with a drag race style tree, and you have two mirrored courses and you start from a standstill. So 60 foot times are really important, and I want something that's really easy to launch with. And so, also at LS Fest, every event was a standing start. So,
yeah, okay, that's brutal, but I would say that. I've driven multi-plate, like, low MOI clutches that are, like, damn near impossible to drive. Like, there's just no way you can modulate it. For some reason, this 7.25 Quartermaster, like, Optim RR setup that I'm on is super easy to get used to.
I've like, heard nothing but good things about Quartermaster.
Yeah, I literally...
Like, I feel like, in terms of, like, really small clutch options, like... LS's Quartermaster seems to be like the most popular.
It is really easy to modulate. Like it seems so really scary because I'm sure you've driven
how much
on,
was
like,
your clutch package?
It's like 2,200.
So cut that number. So take a third of that number, and that's what the Texas drivetrain option costs.
Yeah, which is fine. But I think the problem is what you were saying before, right? Like it's like buy once, cry once, and I can service this. I can service this with the bell housing on. Like I actually figured out that I could pull the clutch cover off. And pull all the plates out with the bell housing still bolted up. So I just pull the torque tube, and then you just pull that crap out, and then you just like put all the discs.
No
back in.
Shit. Okay.
Wow.
That's a big.
Out of all things you said, that was the one.
That's a takeaway. Yeah. All right, thank you everyone for joining this podcast.
And like the key is,
I'm thinking about doing a service tray for the trunk for the diff.
Yeah,
I'm thinking about
I did the same thing
saying
already.
Fuck it and.
Yep, I did that.
G Speed used slide latches, and I thought that was awesome. I was checking out Fleming's car, Superlap, and it was all slide latches for that. Yeah, and yes. I was like, 5 minutes, and I can pull my diff. This is amazing.
Yeah, yeah. But the problem is, you got to pull like the exhaust, and you got to pull that stupid cover off that has like a million bolts on it. Like, I think that's okay. You got to build like a jig to like have a like single hit. Like,
so
just hit it once
I did that outdoors in a slanted, like it was like at a 10 degree, carport at my dad's shop. So my dad, he doesn't own a performance shop. It's just like his fuck around and find out shop that he has his tractor and RV in, and he has a carport, but the whole unit is 60 by 70. So me and my buddy did my clutch in that carport. And it's dirt roads all around it, so it's freaking dusty. So
have you only done this once, or have you done this multiple times? Have you only had the transat once?
Okay. So long story about this car. So I bought it from a Mitsubishi dealership in Lubbock. It was all stock, minus like the dash cover, like a Corsa exhaust, and like some other boomer stuff. That actually,
dude, that's the best. Though. The Corsa sounds so good and so expensive.
It,
you don't want
to so good. That. It's so expensive. I sold it, and essentially, if you. Like, essentially, I got this car for, like, it was 60,000 miles. I'm the third owner. Like, it was the cleanest out of, like, the almost dozen Z5s I looked at. And it was, like, 13.5 grand.
Okay.
And it came with two tops. So, it's, like, technically, the car is, like, 11 grand with all the parts I've sold off of it. And,
Andy, how much was your Z5?
You're gonna make me feel like a dick. I paid 12 for mine, but
for Z06 though. This
okay,
is well, but
okay, no.
But
mine was like double the mileage. Like reverse gear was like synchro was completely gone. It was not usable. I couldn't like. I remember.
Did you have to turn the car off to put it in reverse?
No. Okay, so you could do it, but what you had to do is you had to lean it. You had to lean on the shifter the entire time you're reversing. Otherwise, it would like pop into like a like the gear would like miss, like wouldn't actually engage. But if you put too much load on it, it would also slip. So like I remember putting a trying to back up onto a 2x4, and I just put the 2x4 right behind the rear tire, and I'd try and reverse, and it would strip out. So like I had almost no ability to reverse. I drove that car like a motorcycle. Like I tried to find like spots where I could like get it up onto an incline, so I could like put it in neutral and just kind of let it roll backwards to get out of wherever I was.
Yeah. The only time I found like any sort of pop out issues on my car was if you pull your cover for your shifter, you have those two little bushings that hold your shifter to the torque tube. Dude, replace those. I like some generic AutoZone bushing and replace those things. Because I swear to God, for like 6 months, my car was popping out. I was freaking out. I was like, what the fuck? Like, it tried to adjust shifter position. It's just the bushings. Like, replace the bushings, and the issue went away completely.
That's good to know.
I'm saying like it's a like if that happens, it's an easy money thing to do before you start like tripping about like a trans failure.
No, that reverse thing was definitely a trans failure. And then it finally like I figured out what ended up happening to that transmission. So at NCM, I was like running the last session of the weekend. I'm just out there running laps and I go to shift from fourth to third, and it just won't. And it won't go out of gear. And like it's just constantly in fourth gear, which is, I mean, thank God I have the LS6 makes just enough torque that fourth gear is not that big of an issue if you had to drive around on it. But I think happens too is like the shifter pads, like on the on like that shifter, I forget the shifter ring thing, I forget the term is right now. That shifter fork, the pads will fall off and they'll get jammed, so you can't get out of gear. And it's not like it's crazy expensive to replace or to service, but you know, when you factor in like downtime, like probability of getting someone to service it, or probability of you doing it and fucking it up or doing it right, and then the cost of it, it's like, I think it's like $1,000 in parts if you want to like go in, rebuild all of it. It's like $2,000 to have someone else do it, or it's like $2,500 you buy a 6060. And so I bought a 6060 because I was like, well,
did you weigh it? Because I've heard a lot of people say that all that hardware for the 6060 and stuff is way heavier.
I can believe it, but 6060 feels so much better. I don't even fucking care. So like, it doesn't matter.
That's fair.
It shifts so much nicer than the T56. Like I have the same, I ran the same MGW shifter on the old 56 trans, and then on the 6060, and I've had two 6060s now because I had a GS geared trans, like the 2.97 trans, and then now I'm on the Z06 trans. I forget what the gearing is, like 266 or something. Like it is, 6060s, dude. Like even if you're just keeping, you can do a 6060 and stay C5, like C5 mount and C5 diff if you just buy like a non Z trans. Because like the non-Z 6060s are the older spline count, like 29 spline count or whatever. So you can
at that point work. I was just gonna like augment the subframe to build like a plate to mount the Z06 6060 if I did
that. Oh, just do a subframe, like just bolt the subframe in. And people complain about like the anti-squat being shifted, and so like the car does weird stuff. Like, dude, I put all the control arms back on. I did not, like, I just was like, fuck it, we're just gonna run with this, and it works totally fine. Like, I ran all of last year on it, and with no problems at all. Like, I don't have rear traction issues, nothing that I can't manage, right? I don't need the car to drive. The car doesn't need to drive perfect because I can fix my driving to make it drive the way I want it. So I'm not worried about that. As long as it doesn't stop me from putting lap times down, who cares?
I get that.
I mean, there's also an argument to be made about, like, okay, if you're looking at your data, are you really setting up the car for optimal grip? Are you really having the max G and max cornering speed throughout different elements of the corner?
Yeah.
To say, okay, this is just my driving.
So you can optimize,
not you're leaving
right?
time on the but table.
But it's a time. It's also like a, that's definitely like a, what is that? Exploration versus exploitation issue, right? Like, how much time do you really want to spend trying to find that versus just trying to figure it? Like, you have to, I think the approach for me is have a car with a large process window to allow the driver to do what they need to do. And if it holds you back from being competitive enough, or you can very clearly look at this very quickly and say like, oh damn, like you are definitely like I'm slower than mid corner than a GC8. Then it's like, oh shit, I got to do something about that. Yeah. But if I'm like faster than the GC8, thank God, mid corner.
So
but,
I actually think that's an amazing argument for autocross. I think for autocross, when every course is different and you have different surfaces and you don't know what you're walking into when you go into that event, mm-hmm. I think that's like the ideal argument to have. But when you have a known optimal line on a known surface with a lot of data points on the exact same route of which you go on the racing surface to compete mm-hmm. on, I think you really are going to try to focus on optimization on a road course. Yeah, of course, like it's time attack, and you have only so much seat time to dial in. But I think honestly, out of everything, you just made the perfect argument for like an autocross approach, which is what I've done with this car. I'm like, mm-hmm. I want it to be at the 95th percent. I want it at the 96% to slightly understeer. That's what I've done with this car. Right. But versus track, when you have a known on where you're going on, you know, speed equals distance over time, you know exactly where you need to go to get the most speed. Okay, well then we can have a little more leeway less leeway in terms of we're trying to really get the most out of the available grip.
You can if you had a team. Like there are a lot of things I'd like to do, and I've tried to get students to do some stuff for me. Like people who are interested. If I could rope any engineering PhD candidate to like come and work on my car, like please call me. Like I want students to work on this stuff. Like I have a lot of ideas on like how you can model it, because there's but the issue is like you can have a ton of data, but if you don't have the time to look through it, what's the point? You effectively have no data if you don't have the time to look at the conclusion, like to figure out to do the actual analysis. But then when you're really building out a test plan, like it takes time to build a test plan that isn't just like jumbled bullshit. Like you're not just going to look at a data set that's just like you weren't intentionally like collecting, like you weren't intentionally looking for something. It's the probability of you actually finding the answer that you really want just by looking at like some given data set is a lot lower, right? Like it may be messy, or like what I end up finding when I do like work, like research projects at work is, you know, like the one thing, you know, like I might have all this data, but then it's only the parts that are like really fucked up that are the parts I really needed. And I wasn't, but because I wasn't like I didn't intentionally design the experiment to focus on just looking at this one thing, then now I have all this. Now I just like realize I have to do this test again because the data that I really needed is fucked. But even though I have a lot of data, it's just I don't have a lot of data for the part I actually need. So like, I agree with you. Like, there's absolutely a way that you can do that, right? Like you look at F1, that's all they do. They have a whole team of engineers just optimizing per track. And you can absolutely do that. But from a grassroots perspective, I think it really is like a pragmatic approach. Like there is an engineering ideal, which I like. Like that's the part I'm in. That's like why I got my master's. Like that's why I do all of this stuff. But there's only so much time in the day. And when you're like a one-man team, more or less, like when you're doing the work, when you're building the stuff out, you know, like, and you're still, you know, got a full-time job and like all this other stuff, like
a wife or a girlfriend, you got to make sure it's happy. And
yeah, you got like,
all of the above, man. Like I work full time dealing with a lot of the same like data analysis projects that you do. I don't know exactly what you do for your day job, but I deal with a lot of basically I want to optimize a tool that I can't even see what's going on inside of it. That's what I do for a living. Yep. So, and also like with a 3D print business, I live with my girlfriend. She has her business and her hobbies and like all that stuff that she takes care of. So I completely understand the time thing. And if anything, that's the biggest thing holding this car back is the time I haven't been able to put forward to invest into it. So,
but there's always
we
like,
all feel that.
But there's always barriers that's, like that, right? There's always like a money barrier or a time barrier or something like skill. I think it's like you just like when I look at this stuff, it's not what I I can't look at like what I wish I could do. I need to prioritize those things. So I just get the highest impact things done first. Because I do research. Like my entire job is just research of things. Like I work at a research institute. and I think that's what I've noticed. Like there are a lot of things you can look at, but you really have to like figure out
The lowest hanging fruit.
Yeah, lowest hanging fruit and like it's like the highest impact portion of these projects to focus your energy on. Because you're even in like these big research projects that have like multi-million dollar funding and you have multiple engineers working on stuff, there's always extra like avenues that you could pursue that would be really interesting, but you just don't have the time for or the funding or, the money. Or like
that's
or
the other thing manpower, too. But like, I guess like the difference here is that I'm the way I think about it is just like, okay.
Because you got to keep in mind, the sensors that you want are probably also not going to be like, I have an MMXP in my car. Like the reason I bought the MXP was just to do more data collection because I want to do this. But then the problem is like my fucking car is always broken. And so like I have to prioritize, like, okay, do I want the data or do I need it? Like, need to stick with the stock?
There's jack for that.
There's jack for that.
My car is always broken.
Yeah, like it's
ever since I started autocrossing up until like two events ago, this car has been 100% reliable. And the only reason I've been able to finish any sort of track day or autocross event is because the fucking MAF fell off. It just fell off and sat on the splitter. So I'm like pushing my car up the hill, and then I pop the hood and I'm like, oh, the air filter's chilling on the splitter. You know, and that was that. Other than that, this car has been 100% reliable.
Dude, do speed density and you don't have to worry about it.
The other thing, well, I'm fixing to do a full radiator relocation and cut the frame to fucking mount the air filter and all that shit. But anywho, like
I think someone's, I had to do the same thing. I did a lean down radiator and I was worried about cutting the frame because I think some groups get kind of weird about it.
I mean, I have.
You can justify it, but like
I've talked with Gelati, and I have a lot of different avenues to go.
Okay,
but I don't know. I just like in terms of data, right? Like you have to look at like, okay, what does data mean, and how can we put it into practice? And that's sort of where my focus is, at least in my day job too, and even with my business. Is okay if I run this part and I see this impact or I see this product failure, what does it mean, and how can we make the changes, and how quickly we can make the changes, and how reliable are the changes to yield a quantifiable result, right? Yep. And that's kind of where my end of like, okay, working as an equipment engineer, I'm like, okay, I want to understand fundamentally what every single possible change I can make means, and then look at what the impact is. And that's where like, okay, I feel like if I needed to make an adjustment on a like in a grid life event, I feel like I can have quantifiable impact. But of course, I have to put that into practice, right?
The question for you, right? If you, when you do your tests, let's say you have one session where you have data that shows some impact, how confident are you in knowing that that impact is not due to some environmental thing, some unconstrained degree of freedom that you haven't considered? Or maybe it's just driver variation, right? Because driver variation can be a second over a day. Temperature from the morning to the afternoon is a second for me. No change.
Yeah, it's a second and a half for me.
In driving. So like...
Very good question. That is an amazing question. And I think that's where like you sort of play in like a decision matrix sort of thing where you're like, okay, if the temperatures are so different than what is anticipated when I actually run my sessions, is it really worth making the change? It's not like I'm just going in and at every little hint of data or every little hint of an adjustment I can make, I'm making.
That's true.
There's a ton of other variables to consider. And I think that's when it comes to like, okay, that we're looking at like at every single case, what is actually happening and what is the data trying to tell me, you know, versus so that's,
but there
that's
is like, it's like, but if I just bring this up because there are a ton of variables and it's a very romantic idea to expect that the data will look beautiful and it'll be like, damn, that is the direction I gotta go. But sometimes like you end up chasing, because you're working with an N equals, like you're working pretty much with like N equals one. Like, let's be fair. Like you're not, and like N equals one, you can't even do a test on. Like you can't do any sort of confidence testing on. Like you, a single data point is just a point, right? You can't even make a line from that. like you would need to do a ton of work to figure out how to consistently make that faster. And when you're running, you're not going to run the same track. It's Gingerman is the only track you'd ever run twice at grid life in a season.
Yep.
Right. So like I think it's a great idea. And if I had a team of engineers, I probably would try and push for that. but when it comes to it's the pragmatic approach of doing this. Like what you're describing is something that will be like years of work to get to. And if you really want it to be like a rigorous engineering project, I think it'd have to be like years of work at the expense of your competitiveness, because you would have to have the car be more or less pretty similar every year. Right. And like, you're not going to want to do that 100%. I know it sounds like you
no one,
so like you're definitely not going to do that.
Podcast wants to do this.
So like, you're not going to do that. But like, that's the thing. Like, this is just the part that I see. Like, I started off thinking the same thing. And now as I've gotten like older and as I've done more of this stuff and now I've also like seen a lot of like research stuff in practice, it's like kind of unsatisfying to see. It isn't just like beautiful picture every time you do stuff. You just like look at the data, you like build a skew and you're like, shit, I mean the vibe here says to do this, so I guess we'll just try
the
that
vibe.
It's not really here. Data like it's not true. Like, yeah, you're looking at vibes, like you're not looking at like real things. And in engineering, like when I worked at Intel, they didn't like, you weren't rewarded for doing like crazy rigorous work. Like, you're not doing an academic study. All you're doing is
god
like,
damn,
get the vibe.
Dude,
get
Samsung them. Is the same way. They're just like, but can you just deliver?
But that's the thing, right? That's everywhere. That's this, because everyone has the same problem, which is we don't actually care about what's going on. Like, we just need to figure out what's going on enough to get the job done.
Yeah.
So how can The data is a big thing in the development, but the pragmaticism, if you will, is like the biggest thing with the actual 3D prints themselves, is my business goes. I'm like, how can we pragmatically engineer the most reliable part, you know, in the given like scenario? So it's like, I feel like it's all about context. And I think you make a great point too, of like, okay, there is only so much time, right? But I also think that versus autocross, there is some level of, you know,
consistency.
I think consistency that you can leverage in your analysis to have some sort of edge in the game if one approach versus the other. Now, how far you want to go with that, completely up to you. You know, you can have the Pratt and Miller team on your side and build a car in 2001 or so that whips everything ass to this day, you know, or you can take what is most important to you, or what you deem most important and most that you deem have the most impact, and exploit on one or two variables, and voila, you have something as a result before the end of the weekend. I'm not saying you have to reinvent the wheel every weekend. I'm saying there are things that are potentially out there that exist that, based on a case by case basis, you can exploit in a road course setting versus autocross because of the level of consistency you have. Now with Coda or Harris Hill, that's a bullshit thing because they repave the shits every year. So it throws the whole experiment out the window.
No, Harris Hill has not been repaved in quite some time. It's the bumps that keep changing. It's a different elevation to the track. It's not a different surface.
Dude, like, it's funny, the track sprint, Nick, the, like when we had the first podcast, like right before the finish, my car completely just caught air.
Yeah.
You have this jump when and then you cross the finish and you're like, oh shit, I got a break now.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. But yeah, my biggest concern with you, Richard, is like hearing about all these changes that you want to do to go and fit into Street Mod. My concern is that Street Mod is very competitive and who knows how you would do, but I would rather you keep your car the way it is, just go into the class that it currently fits into, and that way it stays competitive with what you do here locally in autocross. But then also, you take it out, you could do track mod, and I'm glad Andy brought up about the competitive differences between track mod and track mod, because it sounds like you could still do the same, maybe better, in track mod versus street mod.
What do you have done to
because
your car
Because you're
right
able
now?
To... What all
like,
do
like,
I have
like motor-wise. Yeah, motor-wise.
So it is literally a headers and tune LS1, but I am working on getting a complete... Like, I'm working on a Gen 4 swap. Like a completely purpose-built, like we're going through and doing hardware, we're doing forged internals, sort of like
stock compression
motor that will make about 480 wheels starting, but primarily for autocross. The reason why the number's not bigger is because 40 wheel, based on all my math, with the C5 ratios, is about at the weight minimum, is about where you want to be for autocross on a grippy concrete surface on like a 75 to 80 degree day. Obviously, road course, you're going to want way more, which is part of why, like, as I dive into this whole, like, doing one of more road course stuff, it's a platform and an engine architecture that I can grow into. If I want to port the heads, put a bigger cam in it.
Doing Gen 4, so you're doing
easy money.
LS3.
Yeah, it's going to be an LS3 base motor. Yeah.
So, okay. I actually wouldn't do. Okay. I don't know how to feel about this. Because I actually haven't seen any LS3s that, like, I've seen like one or two LS3s that make a lot of power, but like they don't make enough. They don't make enough on the top end. Like, I don't know why. It looks like it's a head limitation, not a block issue, or not a displacement issue either.
Even on aftermarket heads?
Yeah. Like, actually, the highest I've seen so far is like 608 wheel on a built high comp LS3. But I mean, like, for the same amount of work on an LS7, you're looking at damn near 750, 700. Like, what's choking? I don't know what's
cost
choking.
Is also, that's where the cost comes in. Because I know.
Yeah.
I know.
True.
That's where my issue comes in. And
that's everyone's. That's
what everyone I told my, choosing. What I've told my prospective engine partners is, like, the power requirements that I'm looking for, at least for autocross, are nothing to write home about. This is easy fucking money for them. What I'm looking for with these numbers is reliability and repeatability on a road course setting. That is what I'm after.
So
my thing too is, like, I've done hardly any road course experience overall, especially relative to TL2. And my thing is, like, I still want to, like, maintain the autocross, you know,
setup
function of this build.
You're gonna have to
the good news is that. No, I agree, which is why I'm like, I'm not wanting to dive headfirst into one or the other to determine what is for me, right? Yeah. I don't want to go spend, you know, five
yeah, but
on a
when
motor.
You yeah, but I started but autocrossing and then I like went to track and I was like, and I went back to autocross like once, like this 3 years ago, and I was like, you want me to fucking stand out here for half a day? Like,
I know.
Can I pay like another $50 and just not be here? Like, I actually would just rather. Like,
so I know maybe this is the privilege part of me, but I get to announce on most of the local events, and
yeah, like, if you're inside an AC trailer announcing, then yeah, that's
like,
not
that's
not
that
the
is,
same thing as standing
what,
outside at 105 degree in the middle of a mall parking
lot.
There's
only one event the entire year in local autocross that I didn't announce. Yeah. Now, like, I'm also at the same time, I don't build my car for local autocross. I build my car for national autocross, where the courses are, you know, like almost 1.5 times faster. They're way bigger. Yeah. The surfaces are way more grippy. For autocross, for me, it's a lot of like the competitiveness. It's a low hanging fruit of competitiveness. Like, of course, like track times, you're talking like, you know, 2/10 is a pretty short gap, right? Like 2/10 is several mile, like a mile per hour or two in a corner, you know, sort of thing. But it's like in autocross, like hundreds can separate 2 or 3 positions at nationals. So it's, I love the competitiveness. I love, like, from a driver perspective, I appreciate the challenge of having a course being different every time I go. I think,
but is it
I
really,
love
though?
The
after you do it enough, they all kind of, you get a good sense of like what it's about. Like when I stopped doing it, it was like, oh, you know, like I know what this section is going to feel like. Like I know what this corner setup is already like. Like you have a good idea. It's actually less, I feel like it ends up being less exciting because you're like, oh, well, I've already been here and I've done this before. And I know what this is kind of like already. It's not really novel.
I feel like that's site dependent. Like, for example, if you have a really small site, like the Coda lot that we run in Austin, of course, like, I think that's like the first case example of exactly what you just described. The lot is too small. There's too many other things where we essentially do variants of 3 or 4 different courses. And that's all we essentially get. Versus if you have a site like Beeville, Lincoln, or any of the major national events that at least I've gone to, it is a different flavor in a different part of the surface every time you go. But again, it's all like the question we have to ask ourselves is, okay, what do you want out of this? What do you want out of these shits we pour tens of thousands of dollars into?
Way too much time. Yeah.
Yeah.
And time, money. I want to have a And the competitiveness thing you mentioned is crazy, because if I run, you know, 315 AO52s on this car, will I be actually more competitive on track mod as it sits than I would if I downgraded my car slightly to street mod?
Yeah, you would.
There's an argument to be made about that.
Yeah, you'd be more competitive.
At a given horsepower number. There really is an argument to be made about that. So that's like, for global time attack rules for street, it's an easy question.
I would not. Like, so I haven't run GTA for that reason. It's too open. Too open. Street is ridiculous. I like a stock LS6 in street, dude. Like, fuck off. I do just as well just staying home. You know, than like going there.
You can't lose if you don't enter.
Well, I lose anyway. Yeah. So, like,
oh, no, man. Six in your first full season is pretty good. So
it is. But I'd actually anticipate that this year would not be the same. Like, because John Wheeler is coming in, because other drivers are starting to pop up. McHugh finally like picked up his build. Now it's ridiculous.
The other
like,
thing you should ask yourself is how much do you think in how well your chassis is set up and how light your car is? Okay, if you did put more power in it.
My car's heavy.
Okay, hold on. Let's not talk about weight over here. But my car weighs more than both of y'all's.
Focus. 33 driver. My it's biggest loser for my Focus.
Yeah. Andy, how much do your car weigh?
3,300 with a driver.
What? It weighs that much?
No way.
Because the half cage was like... So I actually pulled... I have that Quartermaster clutch that dropped guaranteed 40 pounds off my drivetrain. I already have coils. I have the... I weighed the radiator setup, and the radiator setup that I built weighs less than the factory setup does, because you also get rid of like... the radiator bracket, the lower radiator bracket, and everything.
Steel
I have like,
mount stock. So it's easy to get rid of that weight.
And like I got and I got rid of I don't have flip up headlights anymore because I had to get rid of it to put the intake underneath the headlights, just because I didn't want to cut the frame. The flip up headlights, don't believe what everyone says. Everyone's like, oh, it's like 50 pounds weight reduction or something, dude. I think it was 5 pounds on both on each side weight reduction from the shitty headlight setup I have now. Like, I shave like 10 pounds off the front of the car. I think though the thing that offset it was the bolt-in half cage, because that weighed like 100 pounds on its own.
That'll do it as well.
We'll absolutely do it.
But I'm trying to. I mean, that's also with a full tank of gas, because my my level sensor right now is not working in one of the tanks, so I've just have to run full tank the entire time. But I've been running like a half tank last year. Yeah, I pulled the tank out to do the fuel system because I was gonna boost the car, and then I put it back in and my gas gauge doesn't work and I don't want to go back there right now. So
at about a half tank versus full tank, you're looking at like 50 something pounds.
Yeah, just about. So I think last year when I was competing, the car weighed in at right around 32 with less than a half tank. And you can actually run with the factory pump setup. I found that you can run less than a quarter without starvation, which is also crazy because you can really
get. I found out why that is. The way it's the LS tanks work is for the first half, they take from one side, and they take from the other. So you have a very like. I mean, you look at the shape of the fuel tank, that fuel is going to be down at the pump, you know, even at very high G levels. So
they did a good job with it. They did a good job.
Seriously, though.
New cars. Yeah. You don't get that with all these new cars. And they all have these fuel starvation issues. We're like, even my 240, I ran that thing down to like.
Like some S2000 guys are bitching about having to run below an eighth of a tank. I'm like, get out of here.
You're like, dang, dude, the only thing I'm worried about is running out of gas.
Right.
Wow, must be nice, y'all. I've never actually fuel starved my car. My car's been fine so far.
But yeah, I mean, yeah. Do track mod. Yeah. Don't bother. Like, you will be more competitive.
Yeah, especially if this is gonna be your first year competing in or getting into time attack after you go through HPD sessions. I would definitely say leave your car as is. Leave it how you set it up, because you set it up the way it is because you enjoy it. You enjoy where it's at right now. Otherwise, it wouldn't be here. So now that you're dipping your toes into the track scene, leave it as is, go into the classes where it's competitive, add the components that's necessary, like track mod needs some fire suppression, equipment attached.
You don't need fire suppression, but it's highly suggested. Well, like, you need a fire suppression. But,
what I was going to, what I, let me all I was gonna say is like just go and send it. Like the car is equipped the way it is. Maybe slap some new pads in there that are higher heat resistant.
Well, I already have. I already talked to somebody. He's got some like Carbotech AP1s with like half a session on him, and he just tried them. And
yeah, anything that will like handle higher heat resistance.
Like stainless brake lines for like $170. He told me it's like come take it.
So what I will say is going on track doesn't.
I'm currently saving up for AP brakes, the stock or the non-Radical front APs.
Like the the 83, the 8320s or whatever.
Yeah, so that's what I'm going to go with their really high flow rotor, whatever they tout as their high flow GPs.
Mm-hmm.
And then stick with the stock rears and, you know, really, really nice fluid. And that'll be my brake setup. I'm going to probably work on some sort of plate like how Vorschlag does. To just deflect some more air into the rotor just to be safe. I mean, that's adds like 2 pounds, you know, not really going to do much.
Yeah, 2 pounds sprung mass there, unsprung mass.
Oh, yeah. Well,
yeah, but I will say,
hey, well, okay, I'm just joking. Two pounds are in a wall, Handy.
It doesn't matter. You'll be fine.
You'll be fine. There's a lot of runoff on tracks. Most of the time, there's a lot of runoff. Especially
you'll know beforehand. Like if you're a ham-fisted fuck, like you deserve it. Like you just if you're an experienced driver, you definitely get the vibe. Like well before it gets to the point where it's a piece of like your brake pedal is a piece of wood.
Yeah, my yep,
exactly.
You'll be fine. You
Mark 60. Mark 60 is on the books too.
Yeah,
probably before the end of the year.
I ran non-ABS up until the end of last year.
Gang. I have been no ABS since day one.
But then I got ABS, and then I fixed my ABS unit. So now we're going to find out
if it's actually better or not.
Dude, honestly, like all of the ice mode horror stories have disincentivized me fixing my ABS unit.
Yeah, no, that's the exact issue for me. And I think, but then I see like Lewis will put down like their G-speed carb like on factory ABS on like 335 345 A7s or R7s on track, and I'm like, well, I guess they're not dead yet, so like I don't know.
They're fine. So
might
far
not be that bad. Yeah,
the people of that actually, level of wealth have good enough health insurance, but they don't give a fuck what happens.
Yeah, I mean I'm worried about like having to fix the car, like yeah,
likewise. Well, hey, it's already been like a whole hour. Was there any other topics that you wanted to talk about?
No.
Other than that, that was only my really rules question. I may need to talk to Andy about like fender, you know, flare solutions. On like because I have 18x12 and 18x13 forger stars. I can do up to 295s with no problem on my speedline wheels. But if I could not purchase a new set of wheels to be in my spot in grid life, I'd be pretty happy.
Do track mod then, because dude, what are you gonna do? Put 275s on a 13?
No, I was gonna do two seventy fives on my speed lines. Oh, I was gonna do 275s on my 18x10.5 because it's a set of 4 Z06 rears and they're the real speed lines. So
yep.
Hey Andy, over in track mod, it says that you can run down to 60 treadwear tires. Are you doing that, or are you still running 200 treadwear?
I'm running SC3Rs. I think the 60, so like the treadwear rating, like under 200 is pretty. Like it's all over the place in terms of performance, right? Like our 888s are under 200.
Oh, so,
and like our 888s I think are 100, but it's like I looked at this test and like the Nankang Air One is also significantly better than the R 888.
Because our 888's the same compound as it was when I was in high school. Like it's just a different belt design. Like, but anyway, okay. Like I think I run 100 treadwear tire now because. And I run that Goodyear SC3R because I think it's the fastest tire up until you get into like Hoosier territory or non-DOT R-cons.
Right.
Because everything good is under 60, right? You're not like Hoosiers are
everything. Yeah, that's what I noticed too in my research is like everything under 60 is crackhead land. I mean, you have purple crack at under 60. So
But everything above 60, you got to be very, very careful about what you choose. Just because it's rated at 60 doesn't mean it's any faster than 100, and just because it's 100 doesn't mean it's any faster than 200.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Especially when you have Yokes are great tires, man. I've tested, I think, five different tires. And the yokes are what works on this car. I've tested Falcons, BFG Rivals, King Kang CRS V1 and V2, Falcon 660s. The yoke is king, man, as far as tuner shredware goes.
Yep.
There's minus like an ACR.
For autocross, for sure. Yeah. All my autocross buddies are all like real weird about it. They're like, oh, RE71. Like, I have a friend who hates RE71 RSs because...
I've driven cars on them. I actually think that one might be the tire I run if I end up doing street mod.
I've been loving my tire.
As far as autocross goes, if you're trying to get on the power out of elements, the yoke has so much forgiveness. And out of all the tuner treadwears, I think it does the best in multitasking. I think you could really trail break into stuff. You can really start adding throttle out of stuff. It really warns you before you go over, too. It doesn't just snap like a Falcon or snap even like the Nankangs.
Right.
It's a very, very forgiving tire. And I've managed to do almost a whole season on a single set of yokes with the setup.
That's crazy.
That's like just the way I've set up the car. I realized that, okay, if you're wearing tires evenly, it means you're getting the most out of them. So it's, you know, all the hardware seems to be working pretty well. So
that's good.
Pretty cool.
But yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Well, I'm going to end the podcast here because I don't want to keep going till this evening. I got to do shit on my car.
Yeah. I actually need to do a bunch of tuning stuff now.
Yeah. I'm fixing to go head to lunch with some family. So
nice. It's all worked out
pretty nicely.
I'm going to kill the recording now.
Andy, wonderful to meet you at least to face. Hopefully, we'll see each other at an event sometime in the
Have you signed up? Have you signed up yet?
I haven't signed up to anything, man. I just got this house, so that's where my priority's been at the start of the year. And that's where my money's gone. I mean, this garage is, I can't see it now, but I mean, I got a TV in here. I got whole stacks of tires, tools. So we're set up to build whatever comes next.
Nice.
We'll see what
see what I'm definitely jealous of that AC. I want to install AC in my place now. I was looking to a split unit. I think I'm going to. I got room on the outside on the.
I used it on the last podcast. It was pretty hot, so I turned on the AC and I was kind of a little cold before the podcast ended.
So, damn,
sounds expensive.
It's literally just
not that bad. You're only using.
Where is it?
But it's like going out through the garage door. Like,
do you insulate the garage? Okay, well, Richard needs to go and insulate it. If I were to install in my garage, I'd insulate the garage door and keep it inside.
Oh, there it is.
Add more insulation to the attic as well.
Like on the door.
There you go. So, something. Honestly, when it's 105, when it's 105 outside, 95 feels amazing inside the garage.
In shade.
Oh, yeah. Especially.
Yeah. It makes a difference, in my opinion. So, all right. I'm going to end the podcast. Thank you, everyone, for listening over here. So, anyways, I will talk to y'all later.
Take it easy.
See ya.
Bye.